Cool. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for making this podcast today. Appreciate your time. So thanks again. Let's just start off with letting everyone know a little bit of your background, where you're from, why you do what you do. And if you can, a little bit of your like personal story, not just professional.
Yeah. Gotcha. Well, my name is Christopher Scott. I'm from Portland, Oregon. I, you know, grew up in Portland. You know, a lot of people don't really meet people from Oregon, especially black people. But I'm a social worker. Really a therapist, you know, that's my role, but you know, my career is social work. I got into this field because I grew up like in the foster care system and I wanted to be like an example of, you know, if you just kind of, you know, have faith and do what you're supposed to do, you know what I'm saying? Like, things will turn around. I know like when people are in the system and you're fighting against caseworkers and judges and POs and all that stuff, it looks kind of dark. But, you know, my parents did all that and was able to, you know, get their stuff together and, you know, was able to get all the kids back. So I used that as part of like, just kind of like, you know, my testimony and then let people know that it is possible. It does seem dark right now, but it is possible to kind of overcome whatever you're going through, you know. I primarily work in the field of mental health. You know, like I said, I'm a therapist. And right now I do like what you call intensive outpatient. So like, you know, people might be struggling, need some help of getting, you know, restabilized, you know, to come to my program for about 20 days, you know, do groups for about 3 days a week. And then, you know, hopefully we find them some, you know, long-term treatment and then we discharge them. So, but that's new. I've worked with juveniles for, you know, for about the last 10 years. I worked, you know, I worked in juvenile jails. You know, I was line staff, which is kind of like, you know, like the CO equivalent. Then I got my master's degree and became a QMHP. And that was like my dream job, but, you know, situation didn't really work out, you know, the environment. You know, the jail environment isn't really too helpful, isn't too inviting for social workers. I kind of learned that the hard way, so had to get out of there. I'm kind of upset because I really enjoyed that job. I really enjoyed working with those kids, and I feel like I was like, you know, somebody who could really speak the clinical language and also speak their language, you know. So it just was kind of disappointing, but had to do what I had to do, you know, saying for myself and my family. But a little bit of personal story. Yeah, I grew up in foster care. My parents was on drugs for at least the first 5 years of my life. So did that foster care stuff. Like I said, you know, parents got us back. So we went from being like really, really poor to like just kind of regular broke, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, working class broke, doing all that stuff. Kind of just, you know, then from there on, mom and dad got divorced. And then like from there, you know, I kind of went through my own like awkward phase, like kind of really just really wanted to be quiet, didn't really want to get seen by much, you know, just kind of want to do my own thing. I subdued a lot of my creativity that I used to have. I kind of just hid it and kind of kept it hidden for a long time until like my mid-20s. I kind of like I had a spark, like, you know what, I used to like to do things like write stories and stuff like that. So like through that journey and through like learning about mental health, I realized that I suffered from a lot of like childhood trauma, depression, anxiety, really just, you know, and because of those things, I didn't really want to be seen. But the thing, you know, like Hip Hop Social Worker, which is something that a podcast that I do, is actually like my own business that I run, helped me kind of come out of my shell, you know. So like, you know, so I consider myself like a late bloomer, you know what I'm saying? And a part of my goal is to like reach back and to help people find their self-esteem early, so like they don't have to hide like I hid for so many years. And I feel like I wasted so much time just trying to like not be seen, when, you know, like it's okay to be seen. It's okay to, you know, fail. It's okay to do things that you're not good at. You know, I feel like I had this like perfectionism in me, and because I was, because I wanted to be so perfect, I just didn't do nothing, you know. So so and I remember I seen a meme or like a IG post said that perfectionism is like a sign of trauma. And I was like, God, that makes a little bit of sense, you know, at least in my book. It made a whole lot of sense. So yeah, it's a little bit about me. You know, I'm just trying to spread the good word and help people find themselves and, you know, and same time finding myself, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Thanks for that. That's really cool because there's a lot that you said in the story that I relate to. I want to touch on a couple of things, but one of the things I relate to is the late bloomer thing. You know, I used to do a lot of things as a kid too. I used to open up my desktop computer, take it apart the inside and put it back together. And along the way, I kind of lost all that because just things that happened growing up with my mom and bad relationship with her. And then not knowing what was going on, I just felt like I was sad all the time. And then eventually, long story short, into my early 20s, it led me to attempted suicide twice. I had this idea to build something out of my experience, but I never did anything with it because at the time I was doing something else. And then something else happened in my early 30s. I'm 37 now, in my early 30s, which fueled that fire again to like create that. But I was always nervous. You know, I didn't grow up around anybody in tech. I didn't really know how to build anything in tech. So, you know, I just was thinking like, who am I to build this? How am I going to talk about this on Twitter? People are going to look at me like a phony, not respect me. And so for a time I started, you know, listening to all the podcasts on founders that built these great companies, and you hear these stories, you're like, wow, I'm going through the same thing, but you're not that same person. So I've been kind of just finding myself as well. And just recently, I just got back to like who I was when I was younger. You know, I grew up in Brooklyn. So I grew up listening to hip hop. I grew up around, you know, I'm half Puerto Rican. I grew up with Puerto Ricans. I grew up with Black people. And I started kind of like changing how I spoke on Twitter because I wanted people to see me like, oh, I can be professional. And I didn't talk about hip hop. I used to be a DJ. I produced music and I played in hip hop clubs in New York. And then my friend said, yo, you just got to get back to who you are and just be yourself. And, you know, people will follow you for that and then see what you're doing on the business side. So I definitely feel that because I'm still kind of going through that and trying to just put everything back together.
Mm-hmm.
And I do want to touch on that, the foster thing, because my grandmother adopted two kids. When I was young, she adopted two kids who were about 2-3 years older than me. So it was really cool because I was an only child. But I didn't really know the whole story. And when I got older, they told me what happened, that their parents, they were on drugs as well. And they never found them again. So there was no communication. So my grandmother adopted them. But I can't imagine how hard that can be when, you know, you're taken from your parents and then they just take you to a stranger's house. Like that was always like, when I would think about that, that's like, would have been one of my biggest fears as a kid. Now, how was that? How did you go, you know, when you, I know you were really young, but do you remember anything? And how did you kind of work through that if you even tried to?
So, I mean, I feel like I'm still kind of working through it. And luckily it wasn't strangers. It was my aunt and uncle, but I didn't know them enough to like feel comfortable, you know what I'm saying? Like all the way. So it was a trip because I didn't really understand what was going on. You know what I'm saying? Like I knew my mom was somewhere. I knew my dad was somewhere and I would see them like once in a blue moon, you know what I'm saying? But I never really thought about it. I really just lived life, you know what I'm saying? And it's weird because like, you know, being five or being, I remember turning six, but I don't remember like timestamps. Like I remember turning six. And so like, I knew like it had to happen like 1991, like maybe like August or, you know, July or something like in that time frame. Cause I turned six in September of that year. And I only remember that because it was on videotape. My aunt, I knew some like videographer and he had videotaped it. But it was interesting like to think back, like just to kind of like, you know, like being away from family. I mean, you're around family because I still seen aunts and uncles that I knew. So like I knew I was close. I just didn't really understand like why I couldn't see like, you know, my mom or dad. But at the same time, I didn't think about it till after my parents got back together and they got custody of us again. And I remember like being like seven, being six or seven, and I couldn't sleep without my mom and dad. So like I was sleeping in the bed with them, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I really didn't put that together until I got older. Like, shit, I was going through some things, you know what I'm saying? Like, because I remember having nightmares for maybe a solid year. I had nightmares, you know what I'm saying? Like severe, like just kind of nightmares, like just like shit you would see like in a sci-fi movie, like just kind of like just crazy shit. So while I was in foster care, I really didn't think too much of it, you know, because I was around like, you know, my grandma, my grandpa, aunts and uncles that I knew. But after like I got back with my parents, it's kind of when I was like, you know, like I didn't really want them to be separated. Like, you know, like they were NNA, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, if you know anything about that, that is a big commitment, you know what I'm saying? Because you're coming off of drugs, you need support. So like they would go to meetings all the time. And I remember like just kind of being like nervous that they would never come back, you know what I'm saying? Like that kind of shit. So the effect really didn't hit me until after we had all got back together as a family, you know. But then as I learned more about mental health and social work and started taking these social work classes, and then my mom became a certified alcohol drug counselor. So talking to her about things is really when I started to unpack, like, damn, I was going through it. But when I was in it, I was in it. I didn't think nothing of it. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, like I said, because I was surrounded by, you know, like, I would see my grandma Scott on the weekend. I would see my grandma Brown throughout the week, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was with my brothers, so it didn't feel too unfamiliar, right? But to your point, if I were somewhere like in Coos Bay, Oregon, you know what I'm saying? Like, just because, I mean, that happens, right? Because, like, you know, people get took from homes, and they, you know, whatever foster home's open, that's where you're going. So, you know, a DHS worker might drive, you know, from Portland, and they might drive 6 hours to Burns, Oregon, something like that, just because that's the only foster home was open. And I ain't about to stay with you all night, so I'm taking you there. So, and that's the problem in our system in Portland. Like, we don't have a lot of urban communities, right? Mm-hmm. So if you are from Portland and you get took from a foster home, and like foster homes are just like not, you know, like not available, you might go to a program in Pendleton, which is like rural Oregon, and or Salem, which Salem is kind of urban, but it's still like, it still ain't Portland, you know what I'm saying? So, and that's part of our system that needs to be addressed, because, you know, luckily I had a family member that was willing to take me and my brothers and not split us up. But that is something like you could end up, man, 5 hours away from Portland if that's what has to happen. So, wow. So yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. I know you said you worked in the correction system. Have you worked with kids that been fostered?
Yeah, I have. Not for a long time. Well, for a couple of years, you know. Working in that system, it, like I said, it's crazy, because like you got to find a placement for youth, you know, kids be mad because, you know, like they might have had a visit set up, and then, you know, if they misbehave in the program, you gotta take it away, or, you know, mom might cancel on them or something like that. So I remember like kind of like, you know, like you would have like these youth that were like, all right, you know, saying like, you know, today is Friday, he's supposed to have a home visit. He might be showing a little bit of behavior because he's anxious, so just kind of be wary of that, or mom might call and cancel. Or mom might be late, or, you know, mom or dad might be late or something like that. So those kind of things, yeah, like it's a trip. And then, but working in those systems, I learned about more of my foster care. So like, you know, like my primary care was my aunt and uncle. But when I went to my, you know, my grandma's house, you know, that was respite, you know, like they needed a break. So they sent me to Grandma Scott's house or Grandma Brown's house for a weekend. And then I would go back to there. And so like, I learned a lot working in that system about my own foster care experience.
Yeah. Excuse me. Have you yourself ever been to therapy, seen a therapist?
Yeah. Before I got married, I saw a therapist. They had this thing called the EAP, which is like a panel, yeah. You know, so I'm sure it's everywhere. I'm looking to, you know, to find therapists again, because I found out like, I kind of put together that, you know, that I have like workplace trauma from last, you know, couple of jobs, but people are booked solid. So
yeah.
So yeah, you know, I really took therapy for granted, you know, like, because I was working so much and I really like, I can always find a therapist. I ain't tripping. But now that I really like want one and like the pandemic happened, like it's really getting hard too. It's really getting hard, to find one. So any therapist out there, you know, don't take it for granted, you know, go to the therapist, you know what I'm saying? Go figure it out. Right. So, but yeah, I have been in therapy and, I felt like it was cool because, like, I told her stuff that I haven't told anybody else. So, like, it was, you know, and it was just, it was a nice experience. And, you know, I felt like because we hold so much as therapists and, you know, just people who give services to other people, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if I can't hold it, so somebody going to have to hold it for me, and I don't want to put it on my wife because the pandemic, she has to work and be childcare. So like, you know, so that's when I realized I needed therapy. Cause it's like, you know, I can't really come home after a bad day at work and say, man, my day was shitty. So I'm sorry. I don't know if I can tell her. But tell her that. And then she looks at me like, you know, like typing and then like my daughter's running around. I was like, that's kind of tone deaf. So that's when I was like, okay, maybe I need a therapist. Like maybe need one. So, but like I said, I took it for granted. So now I'm on the hunt trying to find one.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always wondered that about therapists. You hear all these problems all day and you're like, what do you do with that? Because when, like, just for example, if I'm reading the news every day or on Twitter, political news, like I've found myself like just feeling anxious reading all the news and getting,
right,
you know, angry. And it's like, all right, what do I do now? What do I, you know, who's going to hold this? So sometimes, you know, I talk to my girl and, you know, I start just saying like, I can't believe this. I saw this. And it's like, and she's just looking at me like, you know, I'm like, all right, I'm sorry. And then I stop actually, you know, looking at all this political stuff and it just all goes away. I don't feel anything. It's like, it doesn't exist. Yeah. But, you know, there's a balance of needing to know what's going on and not really like digging into all these issues, or especially reading the comments, because you just go nuts reading the comments.
All the comments, yeah. Portland or Oregon's pretty rural. Like Portland is dense in population, so like it's a blue state because of how dense Portland is, and like, you know, in the rural counties are huge counties, but like 50 people that might live in them, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So once you go outside of that Portland bubble, man, it gets crazy. And then like reading like the news posts and like, you know, like, cause here we had like for like 100 days in a row, we had protests, right? In the comments, man, people was going off in the comments. You like, damn, you would not think Portland was, or Oregon was a blue state if you really read these comments. But the comments, I had to chill on the comments, man. I can't do it.
Yeah, you know, so I just tell myself, if you see a picture, you know, like the like on Twitter, if it's an animal or something that's not like a real person, then I don't even look at the comment. To me, it's either a troll or a bot. So I don't even bother with it. So that, right, that actually worked.
That's a good way to kind of, trim the fat. See what's good for you. See what
it is. Yeah. So why did you end the podcast? You got a really good podcast. I think you started like 2-3 years ago. I was looking at it. I listened to some episodes. It's really good. Is there any reason that you ended it?
You know, I wanted to end it while I still enjoyed to do it, you know? So like, and you know, I feel like it was this time to like do other stuff, right? So now, like, I do videos now on YouTube. You know, YouTube page still the same title, Hip Hop Social Worker. I remember earlier this year I presented at a conference, and one of the keynote speakers was like, "Hey, you know, if you got these ideas, you need to pitch these ideas to these news stations or these radio stations because you know." They're looking for people in your field to occupy space. So I was like, all right, cool. So like, you know, podcast took a lot of work. It wasn't too demanding, but it was a lot of work, you know, trying to edit it and then like, you know, trying to like book appointments and trying to get people to, you know, to, you know, well, luckily, whoever I asked to come on loved the idea, and they always came on. So shout out to y'all. They held it down, got me a lot of content. I appreciate that. For the loan, nobody ever fronted on me to talk about they need, you know, any kind of money. So I appreciate y'all. But I didn't want to be chasing the rabbit, you know, because I could interview a social worker every day of the week. You know what I'm saying? So I just was like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and end it while I still love to do it. And because I'm not going to do it forever, I might as well end it right now. And plus, I want to, you know, next year I'm going to like do like a soft approach to see clients privately, you know what I'm saying? So I just needed to open up that and then, you know, move on to something else. But I do have an idea. I am going to start trying to pitch an idea for a radio show. My wife's best friend is a therapist. So, you know, she's actually on a couple episodes. If you see the name, Drea Rideau, she's on a couple episodes of the podcast, and she has a private practice that's thriving, you know, and, you know, she wants to get in that space of, you know, doing radio and stuff like that. So I was like, you know, let's see if we can, you know, get a show cracking. So we're going to try to email some of these radio stations and see if we can get like a little time slot or something, see if we can get some revenues from it, you know. But yeah, I just didn't want to be chasing, you know, something that had no end. So I just was like, you know what, if I feel so good about the podcast, people were still giving me praise and people still like hit me up about, you know, this episodes that I forgot I even recorded. I recorded so many episodes that I was looking through my stuff like, man, I forgot I don't even know what this episode even, what I'm even saying on this episode. But so yeah, it was just time to move on, you know. You know, while I was still kind of in the mood to, you know, still do it. Like, I don't know where I got that idea from, but I, you know, some told me, you know what, it's time to go ahead and do something different.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like you went out on top. So not many people do that. They keep going, like you said, chasing the rabbit. And it is, you know, the podcast is fun, but unless that's all you're doing, it is time consuming. You know, booking the people, the editing. I mean, editing an hour podcast, just listening to it and going back and cutting something, it takes forever. It takes like 4 hours sometimes for me.
Right.
So, yeah, I feel you on that. Yeah.
Yeah, for real.
I was just listening to the, I forgot the name. I think it was called Mental Exercise. And you were talking about, talked about coloring as a coping skill. And I read posts about therapists talking about coloring, but they never really dove deep into it or talked about it like the way you did. I know my girl has a coloring book and I've looked at it before. And because I've heard therapists talk about it, but I look at it, I'm like, it looks like it's going to take a long time. So I never really did it, but you actually got me interested in actually maybe trying it. Could you just go into that a little bit, like why it's such a good coping tool?
Well, that's the point, right? You said it might take a long time. Well, that's the point. You know, saying something that takes a lot of time, a lot of detail, and takes your mind off of whatever you know what I'm saying, of whatever you're trying to run from or what's stressing you out, just zone out, you know, get some, you know, get a picture, get some color pencils and just color, you know. I feel like, you know, the more, you know, the longer it takes is the better, you know what I'm saying? Because it's a lot of detail and it takes a lot of my attention off of whatever I got going on. So it's really just a mindfulness tool, you know what I'm saying, to bring you into that moment. So like, you know, like let's say, man, my mind's racing because pandemic outbreak at work, wife is, you know, stressing me out, clients stressing me out, my car, engine light on, whatever, you know, I can't fix all that overnight. I can't fix all that right now. So, you know, while I got some time, I get my coloring book, I'll sit down and I'll just start coloring, you know, and I'll just try to add a lot of detail, try to add like a lot of colors to it, you know, like sometimes there's like turquoise and pink and green. I just really try to make it like vibrant and colorful. And what that's doing is that's bringing me into that moment. And I'm just in this moment and I'm focusing on coloring so much that, you know, the goal is to forget about whatever you got going on. And then it allows you time to, you know, refocus, regroup, and then, you know, organize your thoughts And then you get a strategy of how you're going to tackle, you know what I'm saying, what's stressing you out.
I'm definitely going to try that now. I'm really interested in seeing what happens because my mind is always running. I have a small team of there's five of us now, and
yeah,
I've caught myself always thinking like 2-3 steps ahead when I'm trying to do something, and that takes my mind out of what I'm doing, and I get unfocused. And I try to sit down for 15 minutes to try to like to just get back in the zone. So that kind of works. I run, but I've been feeling my mind has just been racing, and you know, I meditated and nothing's working. So I'm gonna try that one. And you know, there's a lot of coping skills that therapists, you know, I see a lot of posts on Instagram and Twitter, and you read articles online, different coping skills. And a lot of people in the comments say, all right, so you're giving me these coping skills, why should I go to therapy? And to a lot of people, you know, what happens in therapy is like a dark box. Nobody knows, you know?
Right.
So, you know, to anybody listening, why should someone, if they have all these coping skills and they're learning by reading it online and trying to put it into practice, you know, what makes that added step of going to therapy that much more powerful?
Yeah. So, coping skills is just a part of the, you know, a part of the, of the mixture, just like how medication is part of the mixture, right? So you get coping skills, like if you go to the right therapist, you can get medication, but where are you going to put that energy? You know what I'm saying? So like I can use coping skills over and over and over and over and over again, right? But that only lasts so long, right? So then you go to your therapist and it's like a judgment-free zone, and you can kind of just, you know, like, you know, spout whatever you want to spout. And your therapist can take that word and just kind of let it be, or they could take it and give you something else, you know, to help grow a different thought, you know? Like, so I see it as like, it's just an important part of the mixture, because it's not all about coping skills, right? Because sometimes the therapist has to tell you that, you know, you're doing okay, you know? And that's kind of what that's, you know, like what a therapist is for. You know, like a therapist is there to motivate, and they're organized, you know, they're to help with, to help calm you down and bring you back to reality, you know? So yeah, I mean, I could go to my own Instagram account and see all the shit that I post and be like, oh man, this is a good idea. And for some people that works, you know, some people don't need to go to therapy, and they read some articles and it works, it's fine. But for some that, you know, you might be trying those coping skills and it ain't working, you might want to, you know, make an appointment, because, you know, you might need a little extra motivation, you know? And I feel like that's what the therapist is for. You know, the therapist is there to really make sense of the coping skills, you know, because even if you read them, you know, like you said, the coloring, right? You was like, you know, I heard it before, but nobody's ever broken down in a way, you know, that you did. So like, that's what the therapist is for. You know what I'm saying? They're to make sense of the stuff you read. If it doesn't, you know, like if you have questions like, well, you know, like why should I, do square breathing? You know, why should I breathe in for 4 seconds and breathe out for 4 seconds? Right. And the therapist can tell you, well, you know, like that really helps, you know, regulate your thoughts. You know what I'm saying? Like if you're hyperventilating, you know, like somebody having a panic attack, start hyperventilating, that can lead to like some physical problems, right? But if you do square breathing to really slow your breath down, you know, breathe in for 4 seconds, breathe out for 4 seconds, and then it kind of relaxes you to a state to where you can just get your thoughts together and, you know, ease your anxiety, then there you go. So yeah, it's just an important part of the formula. Now, like I said, everybody, you know, might not need therapy, because and that's a thing too, you know. But if you are experiencing like things that are beyond coping skills, like if you got PTSD, you know what I'm saying, like that might be more than a coping skill, right? You know, like in, you know, those will work, you know, but, you know, or if you're bipolar, you know what I'm saying, like you might need like a little bit of information of, you know what I'm saying, what bipolar means, right? I mean, you might go to a doctor and they might tell you bipolar, and it's like, well, shit, well, what does that mean? And then a therapist can tell you, like, okay, well, this is, you know, like, really this means, you know, like, you're two polar opposites, you know, like, some days you're hyper, super up, some days you're going to be super depressed, and, like, you know, and how do we, you know, how do you manage those manic symptoms when they come, you know what I'm saying? Like, are you staying up late? Are you, You know, are you doing overspending? Are you, you know, hypersexuality? Are you irritable? Or do you have a super inflated sense of confidence? If you have these things, then you might be having a manic episode. You might, you know, need to address that. So it's just an important part of the formula. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like it's not essential because, like, you know, like it's like, it really depends. You know what I'm saying? Like, not any of this stuff is like mandatory to do, but if you realize the coping skills aren't working, you know what I'm saying? Then you might need to get you an intake appointment.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I said a lot to not say really much, but you know what I'm saying? But
no, you said that there's some good stuff in there. I definitely understood for instance, I've never been in therapy, and you know, when I was younger, I attempted suicide twice, and I was looking for a therapist after that because I wanted, you know, it was like a spark just hit, and I was like, you know, I do want to live, and I want to live a happy life. So I was looking for a therapist. I was on psychologytoday.com, and I was just reading bios and looking at pictures. So I emailed some, and a couple responded back, and the ones that did said, oh, you know, I don't take a case. I'll refer you to this person, and that just kept happening. And I just said, you know, I'm going to try to do something myself because I can't find one. So I started reading about depression, anxiety, stress, suicide. It wasn't working. I understood for the first time, like, oh, this is what it is, but nothing was helping. But I came across a page on YouTube. It was a clinical psychologist, and she had tons of content around this stuff. And I practiced the things that she said. And, you know, that's why I feel like I'm here today. But, you know, there's still a part of me. I do a lot of coping skills, you know? And I still think, would I be that much better if, like, I went to therapy? And part of me hasn't gone because I think, you know, I have this, like, feeling inside that, well, I attempted suicide twice and I'm here today and I never went to therapy. So why should I go to therapy now? But, you know, I'm getting closer to, like, thinking, like, maybe I should go. I just need to find that right person to go to, not just, you know, like the, how do I say it? Just... like when I was looking back then, therapists looked the same. Now there's a lot more therapists that look like you, that look like me, that I'd be more comfortable to see.
Right.
So, you know, that helps me a little bit more too.
Yeah. And I feel like, you doing the coping skills, you know, like it does help, you know what I'm saying? Like I said, like you don't have to see a therapist, but like imagine how much more you might learn if you get a therapist that talk like you, look like you, understand the, like, you don't understand, like, if you make references, you know what I'm saying? Like, you ain't got to explain those references. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, like, you know, like, you get that bond, and you know what I'm saying? And when it's rocking in the system, or like, you know, it's in the session, it's like, okay, you know, like, you know, in the session, it's in the vibe is cool. Now I might tell you something I never told nobody else. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, so, like, you know, how could I, you know what I'm saying, like, and those kind of experiences are unmatched, you know what I'm saying? And but you know, sometimes, you know, like you going to YouTube and doing coping skills does work, you know what I'm saying? Like there is a reason that those things are there, you know what I'm saying? Like those do work. But for some people who might, you know what I'm saying, need the motivation, you know what I'm saying, or need somebody to say, like, you know, like, this makes sense, you know what I'm saying? Like, you should do this because some people don't really, like, see coping skills, you know, without a therapist and, like, take it seriously. You know, like, if I told somebody to say, hey, man, you know what I'm saying, like, you stressed out, don't you, would stop what you're doing and take 5 deep breaths. They'd be like, what? You know what I'm saying? You know, but in a therapist's office, that might make sense, you know what I'm saying? And you can practice them. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like these skills really don't work without practice. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sure you could attest to that. And the first time you might've used a coping skill, it might've been like, that was kind of stupid. You know, third time, we're like, oh, that's a little better. But, the 100th time it's like, you know, I got it down pack. So, you know, it's just a place to kind of, you know, like when you read these skills, you got a place to go, like, you know, put theory into practice, make it make sense.
You know, yeah. So. It's like, it's like, what do you call it? Like physical trainers. So, you know, I've been going to the gym since I was young, but I'm fit, but I'm not like built like Diesel or anything. But I lift, weights, but I don't know what I'm doing. I just go from machine to machine, lifting some weights. But maybe if I had a physical trainer, you know, he or she would tell me how to lift properly, what to do, reps and all that. So a therapist, you know, it's kind of like, I see that as the same thing. That therapist is telling you, like, you know, why coloring is good, why this, like, four-step breathing is good, that process.
Right.
So, yeah. But, yeah, so this was cool, man. You know, I know it's a little late. I don't want to hold you back too late. I really appreciate you doing this. I didn't talk much about what I'm building, because I always talk about it on the podcast. But, you know, I would love for once that we launch that you go on it. It's basically, you know, Patreon?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's basically Patreon, but just for licensed mental health professionals like counselors, therapists, social workers, psychiatrists, psychologists. So that's what we're building. And yeah, I hope once we launch, you join. I'll keep you updated. And we're also gonna have that monetization, because I believe that, you know, therapists, counselors should get paid for, you know, sharing their knowledge. So
absolutely.
I'll let you know once that launches, man.
Yes, sir.
All right. So I appreciate it. Let everybody know where they can find you.
Oh man. So Instagram, Hip Hop Social Worker, Twitter, HH Social Work, Facebook, Hip Hop Social Worker. But you can skip all those steps. You can go to my website, www.hiphopsocialworker.com, and you can find everything from my, you know, podcast videos, you know, the services I provide in Oregon. If you're listening to this from Oregon, you know, I am open to take, video sessions and starting in January. So, you get to read more about my journey, things like that. So yeah, I'm just out here trying to spread the good word.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that. And you could also Google Hip Hop Social Worker. All your pages come up on the front page as well. So
Okay.
Yeah. And I'll put all that in the notes as well, so people can find you, man. Thanks again, Chris.
Yes, sir.